12 o'clock hour, Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. Ask D-Mace coming up at the bottom of the hour, so get your questions ready for him. You can ask him anything about football and life as well. So we will do that coming up at 12:30, but we say hello to Brett McMurphy. He's on the line with us now from the Action Network as we talk a little college football with him. Brett, how you doing?
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. Good to talk to you again. And I want to start with a game last night that I was watching and might have been invested in for various reasons. But Jeff Brohm, somebody that we got to know quite well when he was at Western Kentucky, now at Purdue, I feel like they blew it, Brett. What happened to the Boilermakers last night against Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, if somehow you didn't include the final 2 minutes of the first half and the final 2 minutes of the second half, Purdue wins by what, 21 points? That was a bizarre game. And, you know, I think Jeff Brohm's one of the, you know, best offensive coaches out there, but certainly some questionable decisions, especially when they're up late in the fourth quarter. Last 23 plays, I think they ran. They only ran the ball, I think, twice. And then Penn State, of course, had enough time to go down for that last-minute touchdown drive. You know, it's a tough loss for them. It's obviously huge for Penn State because being in the Big Ten East, they still got the likes of Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State on the schedule. So I think James Franklin really needed that one. But, yeah, I think it's one Purdue gave away, and kind of similar to the other Big Ten game we saw this year, the week before. Nebraska gave that one away. I thought Purdue gave this one away.
What is kind of your outlook with, you know, James Franklin, somebody else we got to know during his time at Vanderbilt? What is kind of your outlook for Penn State this year in that tough Big Ten East like you were talking about?
Well, I actually have him, I think, rated higher than most people on my preseason AP ballot. I had him in my top 25. They did not make the top 25, so a lot of people do not agree with me. It was funny when that game was going on. I was kind of looking back at past seasons, and I didn't even realize this, but last year Franklin was almost Scott Frost-like in that Penn State had lost four games. Four of the last five losses were by 4 points or less, and the only other loss was by 9 points to Ohio State, and they probably should have lost, you know, by 3 points to Purdue. So, you know, that's obviously a disturbing trend. Most of the time, those things kind of equal out, unless you're Nebraska. So I think James is one of the top coaches around, you know, great recruiter. You know, anytime there's an opening at a major power, his name gets out there. I think that shows, you know, the respect people have for him. But, you know, he's in arguably, you know, obviously the SEC West will disagree, but he's in arguably the toughest division in football, and, you know, it's some tough sledding there. But, you know, anything less than a 10-win season, and they're going to be disappointed.
We're talking with Brett McMurphy, Action Network. Now, Brett, the other game that was exciting yesterday, I ended up falling asleep like the last couple of minutes of the game because it was just too long. The game was too long, and I had just gotten off a plane. But the West Virginia and Pittsburgh game, now – Pat Narduzzi, I'm familiar with him because he's a former Spartan, but now he's leading this Pittsburgh squad, who many think will win the ACC again. How big was this win, or was it more so of West Virginia letting one get away?
Yeah, West Virginia had the game. It's a tie game. They've got the ball and perfect pass by JT Daniels, and the you know, receiver who's had a monster day just goes through his hands, and then it's a pip six, and it goes up seven and then holds off West Virginia at the end. I mean, it's big, obviously, for Pitt. You know, the defending ACC champs, the first time the backyard brawl had been played in 11 years. So it's good for them to get it. I think, though, it's probably going to impact West Virginia more because – I think this is a devastating loss for them because they're going to look at this like they had the game. They had it won. They had control of it, and there were some questionable decisions than the pit six. And also, West Virginia is only one of two Power Five teams actually one of only two teams in the country that play 11 Power 5 opponents. So their schedule is not easy at all. And they were projected to be eighth in the Big 12. So that would have been a huge win on the road and let it slip away. And so now they've got Kansas, they do count as a Power 5 opponent. But then after that, they have to go at Virginia Tech and then get into the heart of the Big 12 schedule. So I think that's more devastating for West Virginia than maybe, obviously the impact it will have on Pitt.
Now, two games that I'm interested in, not necessarily, I think they will be good games, but the Oregon and Georgia game and then the Ohio State and Notre Dame game. Which one of those teams, Georgia or Ohio State, cannot afford to lose?
Well, I don't think, to be honest, I don't think any of the four schools can afford to lose.
Okay.
If they want to get to the college football playoff, because we know the selection committee comes out and they tell us that all the stuff they look at and strength of schedule and all these different things. Well, that's great, but there's one thing that has more weight than anything else, and that's number of losses. No team has ever made the college football playoff with two losses. So the losers of those games you mentioned has one loss. Well, what's that mean? Well, if the past 8 years are any indication, it means they've got to run the table to get to the college football playoff. So I think it's huge for all of them. Obviously, I'd rather be Ohio State and Georgia in these games because they are prohibitive favorites. I just think Ohio State is so good. I think, I do my on my AP ballot, I had Alabama 1, I had Ohio State 2. If they'd let me, I'd put Alabama 1A and Ohio State 1B because I think that's how close they are. But after those two guys, I think there's a huge drop-off to the rest of the country. Georgia is within shouting distance, but nobody else is. But I think the two games, I'm most looking forward to Georgia and Oregon because of, former Georgia defensive coordinator Dan Lanning's, now the Oregon head coach, first-year head coach, and, a lot has been made about he'll know Georgia's defense. Well, I think what may be getting overlooked is he's going to know Georgia's offense. He went against them every day in practice. He knows Stetson Bennett's strengths and weaknesses. Doesn't mean he'll be able to do anything about it, but at least they'll have a fighting chance. I think that one's going to be a lot closer than the other one. The other game, I really think Ohio State's going to dominate that game. I like Freeman. I think he'll be a good coach in time, but, he blew a big lead against Oklahoma State in the Fiesta Bowl. Now you're facing the defensive coordinator who just played against you in the Fiesta Bowl. So I think Ohio State rolls, and I think the other game should be a little bit more competitive.
We're talking to Brett McMurphy, college football insider with the Action Network. ActionNetwork.com is where you can find him. Outstanding reporter. So, Brett, it's so, number one, refreshing to have games to chew on here. And I want to ask you about the TV deal coming here. But with Pittsburgh, I noticed you retweeted last night. I think we all noticed it. Just the atmosphere at the Pittsburgh game. And Tennessee is going there next week. So, I just didn't think of a hostile atmosphere when I was thinking of Tennessee at Pitt. But that's going to be a really intriguing game.
Yeah, it is. And, it's an NFL stadium. I know, Pitt plays there, but it's an NFL stadium. And that's what it is. It's not Rocky Top.
Right.
It's not Athens. It's not, we can list them all. It was an incredible atmosphere. Part of that is, it was the first time these rivals had played in 11 years. It was the biggest crowd to ever see in a Pittsburgh sporting event, including any games that the Steelers have played in Pittsburgh. So that's pretty impressive. I assume that this Tennessee game will be sold out. I don't know if it is or not. I don't think the atmosphere is going to be the same. And it's nothing against Tennessee, but it's kind of Tennessee's playing Alabama, longtime rival, and then Tennessee plays,
Mississippi State, or you know, something that's not the, quite the same.
Yeah. I was going to say Ole Miss, and then I forgot who the coach of Ole Miss was.
and what happened last year. Yeah.
So Mississippi State, I mean, it could also – both games could be sellouts, but there's going to be a different energy with the crowd. So obviously Tennessee will be coming in. I ranked Tennessee in my top 25. They didn't get in there. Maybe they will when the new rankings come out Tuesday. So if Tennessee's ranked, maybe that'll get the home crowd going. But I'd be shocked if it's the same atmosphere. I mean, you can't, and again, nothing. It doesn't matter what team would have come in the week after this backyard brawl. It's going to be a monster atmosphere. Great news for Tennessee. It's hard for any team to get up 2 weeks in a row, and you know, Pitt has been talking about this game all off season. The backyard brawl, we hate West Virginia. West Virginia has their fans chant, you know what rhymes with Pitt. And so that's huge. So the question, how do you get back up when you have a quality team coming in the next week? So if I'm Tennessee, this is a great spot for them. You know, come in, play the defending ACC champs, and get away. If they're not ranked on Tuesday, I guarantee you they beat Pitt. They'll be top 15 the following week.
Okay, Brett, let's end with this. What is, just to boil it down, what's best case scenario for Big 12 as they go through these negotiations, trying to roll with, you know, the set of circumstances that they've been dealt?
Actually, the Big 12 is in a great position, and I'm an Oklahoma State alum, and I'm being very honest. They're in a great position because nobody else wants their schools, so they're going to survive. The Big 10 doesn't want anybody in the Big 12. The SEC already got Texas and OU. They already got who they wanted. They're in a better position than the Pac-12. And so the Pac-12 will only survive if the Big Ten doesn't take any more teams. If the Big Ten takes three or four teams from the Pac-12, then you'll see the Arizona schools, Colorado, Utah. I think those schools would then go to the Big 12. And so what's left in the Pac-12 then? Oregon State and Washington State. That conference would fold, similar to how the Big East folded when the ACC raided it. So the Big 12's in good position, at least now, you know, for the next few years. Now, as more realignment happens, then maybe the Big 10 and SEC tries to take some Big 12 schools. I really don't think they want them, to be very honest. And that's why I think, in a weird way, because of that, the Big 12's going to be safe. The ACC, you know, depending on your viewpoint, is okay because they can't go anywhere for the next 14 years. So if you're an ACC fan, that's great news. If you're a fan of an ACC team, that's probably bad news because you probably want to get out and go to the Big Ten and SEC and make twice as much money. And believe me, there are 7 or 8 teams out of the ACC that the Big Ten and the SEC would take in a heartbeat.
He's Brett McMurphy, the Action Network College Football Insider for them. Brett, always good to talk to you. Thanks for the time. We'll do it again soon.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Brett McMurphy joining us here on the program. Coming up next, how should Hendon Hooker in Tennessee be viewed nationally? I know it's one game, but I am curious of what you guys think, and also all of you listening, 615-737-1025. It's Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. Don't miss the Eddie George Show featuring Jonathan Hutton on 1025-1063 The Game every Monday at 6, live from 6 in Peabody. The Eddie George Show presented by Low T Centers. We'll talk to Eddie coming up at 1 o'clock before they head out to Eastern Washington for their first game tomorrow that you can hear on 94.9 The Fan. But right now, discussing Tennessee, their win last night. You know, I called it a big win earlier. I guess it's not. You know, well,
because
it's
the overhead. You were excited.
Yeah, I was overly excited
so
about
that. So
that
made it big.
They covered. I mean, they did all the things that they needed to do. 59-10, the final score for the Vols as they get the win at Neyland Stadium. But they needed to do that. They needed to go out and show their dominance. The offense looked the part. I mean, they start the game off with a pick, and then Hendon Hooker, you know, throws a touchdown pass. He was he had a nice night, 18 of 25, 221, and 2 touchdowns. And then, you know, they were able to get a lot of guys in and let them play. But how are the Vols and Hendon Hooker viewed right now? Brett McMurphy just said he voted for the Vols to be in the top 25. They weren't. They were just on the outside. I think on Tuesday they probably are in the top 25, when the new rankings come out. But what is kind of the, you know, we always talk about the national view of the Titans and nobody giving them a chance. How do people view the Vols right now?
I think they view the Vols as a, you know, wait and see. They finished off. They looked really good toward the latter part last year and at times throughout the season last year. Once they settled in on their quarterback in Hendon Hooker, this team showed promise. Now, you know, the question mark was the defense. The defense played well yesterday. They had a spell right after half where they let Ball State go down and score. But I think Josh Heupel got on the defense and said, listen, if we want to be the team that we've talked about in the offseason, we can't allow this to happen. I heard him say after the game, listen, if we want to be a great team, we can't have these lapses, especially against teams that we are clearly better than. So I think that's how the country sees Tennessee. They're a good team, but beating Ball State doesn't show us much because that's what y'all were supposed to do. Now you got to go to Pittsburgh. Let's see what you do after the Pitt game. You win the Pitt game, who many think will win the ACC again and put themselves in a position for the college football playoffs. If you beat Pitt in Pitt, now that changes the whole narrative about UT. But right now, they're looked at as a team that's, yeah, they're good. They might finish third behind Georgia and Kentucky in their conference. They're okay. They make a bowl game. They're good. But if they beat Pitt, I think now it changes.
Okay. Find this, Chase, I make this point. What is the early line on Tennessee at Pittsburgh? I don't know the answer, but
look, it's what?
The early line, Tennessee at Pittsburgh. I don't know who's going to be favored in that game, but I was interested in Brett's comments, like what atmosphere you're going to get. He said something I had not thought of, and that is maybe the emotional letdown after the rivalry of Pittsburgh, West Virginia.
And that is real.
I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. But 70,000, the biggest crowd ever in Pittsburgh to watch a football game.
Heinz
really
Field,
something.
What is it called now? Whatever Heinz Field or something else.
Yeah, what it's called. But it's it was rocking. Like, I had to ask myself, I was like, that is where the Steelers play, right? Because I didn't see any of the gold seats. Like, every seat was full. It was fantastic. So what do they have as an encore? Brett's theory is maybe it's a good time to catch Pittsburgh. But this is a big swing game. I think Tennessee is going to have some really good matchups, and they're going to roll offensively against Pittsburgh. I wonder, you know, what they'll look like defensively in that matchup. The other thing that you said, Chase, that reminded me of something Ryan McGee told us, like how are they viewed? Ryan McGee said, I like, if I'm Josh Heupel, the fact that I'm not getting too much expectation level in season number two. They're getting votes for the top 25. There's a sense that they're better, but they're not in the top 25 yet. That could change pretty quick. Brett said he had him in there, so I was curious to see what he looked at there. So what's the early line in this game?
If you had to guess, what would you say?
I'm going to say almost a dead pick. It's probably within a point either way. I will say Pittsburgh by two.
I would say Pittsburgh by three.
You're both wrong. Tennessee is a 4.5-point favorite.
Tennessee, 4.5. Wow. And that Pittsburgh line, is a top 25 team. Tennessee is not.
That line opened at, let's see. And that's from BetMGM. FanDuel has Tennessee at 3.5. Just looking at some other lines. Unibet has Tennessee at 4.5.
So now, does that surprise you? So that means that the odds makers watched last night's games and do not see Pittsburgh as a top 25 team. Either that or they think Tennessee is every bit the top 25 team.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
But you said it yesterday in the underdogs.
I think Pittsburgh was overrated.
Yeah. Here's something that caught my attention last night with Tennessee, too, I think was worth pointing out. Hendon Hooker, as your quarterback goes, it goes a long way, right? Mm-hmm. I thought Jordan Rodgers did a really good job of sort of illustrating what a Tennessee quarterback has to do in that offense, right? What does Tennessee do? And, D-Mace, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. they take the guys and put them way out there, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to make you defend the entire width of the field. Hendon Hooker's got a cannon. He hums those fastballs. He looks like a third baseman that can throw the ball from behind the bag mm-hmm. to the first. I mean, he throws rockets out to the sideline. They set up the numbers. And so if you want to spread the safeties out and cheat over there, that sets up really good numbers to run the ball mm-hmm. between the tackles. If you want to play one safety back there, so you have a little bit more room to run, a little more defenders up in the box, mm-hmm. then they're just going to kill you with those throws to the outside. But then you've got those deep shots you've got to hit. That's where Hooker has been a little bit hit or miss mm-hmm. when he has to throw the touch pass down the field in the one-on-one coverage. If he can get next level in that with the receivers he has, that's what's really going to separate them.
Well, what they're trying to accomplish is they're trying to get people outside that box.
Yep.
You know, when they spread these guys out extremely wide, they're trying to use all – they're making you cover as a defense 52 yards wide. All 52 yards they're trying to make you cover. And they're trying to get those linebackers just to kind of get outside that box just a little bit. So now we can run in between those tackles. And, you know, it seems like Hooker has an outlet at all times because – and I seen Milton do this as well. Milton II is when there's nothing down the field, he's looking. He had great protection this last night.
Yeah, they got a really good offense.
Finally hits his outlet guy that is just sitting right there on a sideline for 3 or 4 yards. Well, that's an extended run when you can get, you know, you're looking downfield and then you can hit that guy on the outside that's sitting there 3-4 yards down the field. You hit him, he get a couple extra yards. Now it goes from 1st and 10 to 2nd and 6, somewhere around there, 2nd and 5. So they're trying to make you, Josh Heupel is trying to make you cover every inch of the field. And it worked against Ball State. Now, again, can it work against a much better defense in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, who had a pretty good pass rush last night.
And that's another thing that I'm concerned about is the lack of – now, they got pressure on the quarterback, but they had no sacks whatsoever. Right. But they got pressure. Again, I need to kind of, you know, regress a little bit. Sacks isn't the end-all, be-all. But when you're playing against a team like Ball State, who you know you're better than up front, you should be able to get at least one sack. They got some pressures, but they didn't – you know, they didn't get any sacks.
Yeah. I'll tell you this about the receivers, though. I mean, I like that receiving group that they have. Cedric Tillman goes without saying, but you had Brew McCoy, who is the transfer that's going to help. Jalen Hyatt had the first touchdown. Mm-hmm. You know, he looks to have a big year. Everybody's excited about Squirrel White, you know, is another one. I think they're going to have some weapons.
Holiday had a touchdown.
Yeah, Jimmy Holiday had a touchdown for Milton, a 53-yarder. So – Josh Heupel is going to be able to have his explosive offense, but asking, you know, how they should be viewed from a national level, Matthew in Nashville said, if my Vols beat Pitt, we should be in the top 25. If we go into Baton Rouge undefeated and can beat LSU, we should be viewed as a serious contender with Georgia for the SEC East. Derek, you have said it multiple times on this show that you believe Tennessee will beat Georgia this year.
Yeah, if they can pull out this Pitt game, that I think that puts them in the top 25. Then if they can, you know, depending, I don't. You look at LSU and you say, well, which LSU team are we going to see this year? Is it going to be the team of last year, or is it going to be the LSU team that we're used to seeing with all the great athletes and, you know, everything else, and they come out and they play extremely well. So if they can go into Baton Rouge and then win that game, I think it does sets them up for a potential for the clash with Georgia mm-hmm. during the season. But that's further down the street. Let's not think about that. They need to think about Pittsburgh and trying to beat them.
Coming up next, your questions for our very own Derek Mason. We will play Ask D-May 615-737-1025. Call, text, you can ask about football, the Titans, life, whatever you want. This is your opportunity to get in the mind of a NFL wide receiver, a veteran NFL wide receiver. 615-737-1025. Eddie George coming up at 1 o'clock. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 1025, 1063 The Game. But first, Willie, tell us about QC Kinetics.
Okay, we all know the summer's winding down, but if you have been suffering from the joint pain that it has hindered what you want to do on a daily basis while the weather is warm, it's time to do something about it. So let me tell you about QC Kinetics, and I've been getting the word out really all summer long. If you haven't gotten around to calling them yet, you owe it to yourself to call and get that free consultation because you've put it off long enough. You want to get that real, long-lasting relief from chronic pain in your knees, in your back, in your shoulder, in your hips, wherever the pain may be. If you've tried traditional methods, if you tried it on your own, and it's just not getting better, try QC Kinetics. They've got the ability to get you moving again with that cutting-edge regenerative treatment I've been talking about. No drugs, no downtime, no surgery. Lots of people have done it. They're living life to the fullest now, pain-free. You get a free consultation by calling QC Kinetics right now. 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024. 615-249-4024 for QC Kinetics.
G-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw. Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes. 80 yards for the touchdown.
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Chase, Willie, and
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
It is time for Ask D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace here with you on this Friday afternoon. We're looking for you to help our show. We want to get insightful questions for D-Mace. You can ask him about the Titans. You can ask him about the wide receiver position, his areas of expertise, but you can branch out. You can challenge him. We had some great questions for him last week. D-Mace, one of them was what? LeBron. It was a LeBron Michael Jordan question. Yeah. Also, just some interesting ones where we learned some things about you, like the recruiting process.
Uh-huh.
What was your second choice to Michigan State? These are all questions that have been asked, but we want you to push the boundaries of the show.
Yes.
Text us right now, our text line. You can call if you want to go firsthand. 615-737-1025, brought to you by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Yes, for sure. Weigh in. Ask D-Mace. I hope you liked your open. You know, that was,
oh, I love it. I mean,
that was good stuff.
Yeah. Hope you enjoyed
cutting
that.
Edge.
Cutting edge is what we do.
We have a cutting edge question from the Bluegrass State to get it started.
Lead us off, Willie. Go ahead.
Okay, Will in Kentucky has started off with this. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
That is a definite, and I mean a definite no.
Ooh.
For me, no, no.
Have you ever tried it?
Tried it before. Didn't like it.
So the Hawaiian with the pineapple and the Canadian bacon,
that's a big thing. Canadian bacon. I don't do meat. But I just can't I can't get on board with the whole sweetness and the sort of tanginess of the sauce or then the bread. I just and the cheese.
It's just not you. It's just not you.
Yeah, it doesn't fit my palate, man.
It's a big thing north of the border. In Canada, I really experienced it for the first time, so I'm okay with it. I don't seek it out, but I'm okay.
But you would eat it.
I would eat it. But Derek is a big no. So, Will, there's your answer. No pineapple on pizza.
No pineapple on pizza.
I don't know.
I take jalapenos on pizza, but no pineapple.
See, I get so mad at people that are like, pineapple doesn't belong on a pizza. It tastes
I didn't
good.
Say it didn't belong on
No, I know.
On
I'm,
it.
Not
I
just saying, I'm not
yeah,
saying
not
that.
For me.
I like let's see. Here's
Will is booing you via the text line.
I'm sorry, Will.
Will, I'm with you.
Will, you and I will have a pizza, and we'll put pineapple on it. Okay?
I will, too. I'm in with Will.
Chase is in with us.
Let's see. Another texter says, hey, Derek, when a player like Josh Gordon is brought in for a tryout, how are they treated by the team? Do you have to pay any of their own expenses? Do they fly first class on the team's expense, or are they put in decent hotels? I'm curious how the logistics are handled by the team. That's a good question.
Well, yeah, I don't think they are brought in first class. They're, you know, just
is that
like
why
any
you
other.
Didn't sign with Belichick? He flew your coach to New England.
Hey, they paid for the ticket, so that's all that mattered to me.
Good for
I
the
did
budget.
Get sent a big seat.
Did you get the miles?
No, I didn't get them. Dang it! But no, typically in situations like that, you know, they you know, pay for his plane ticket to come, and they work him out. And typically their guys are not staying overnight unless they want to get a second workout in and want to get some, you know, some one-on-one, you know, time interviews and to him talking with the rest of the coaches. But typically guys come in usually the night before, you know, come on over, warm up, get whatever they need, warm up, and then go through their workout. And, you know, if a team signs them, then obviously they stay. But if it's still one of those up in the air things, then typically that person goes and, you know, you move on. We, you know, because it's during the season, they're usually done on Tuesdays. So guys are not there. So a lot of guys, right. I mean, I may have seen a few guys because I'm in there sometimes working out on a Tuesday. But, you know, most of the times, you know, I'm not there on a Tuesday, and that's when they're working those guys out.
How does it work with the players themselves? Like, let's say it's a guy in your position group. Uh-huh. Who were good guys at sort of breaking the ice? You know, you got a veteran guy. Gordon's uh-huh. been around the block. But, you know, you probably need that guy to go out and just sort of greet him, right? Just make him feel welcome.
I mean, if you see a guy, you greet him. But you know, say they bring him in on a Tuesday. You know if they sign him because they're going to say, listen, we signed this guy. It's going to be a big announcement. We've signed this guy. So when you come in Wednesday, it's just like you're a part of the group. It's like, you don't even think about him.
But isn't there a little sense of, too, this guy may be taking reps away from me?
No, not really. If you're a starter, I mean, you can't worry about that stuff. It's just competition. Yeah. You know, bring the next man in and we go. But, you know, whether it be, you know, guys moving around from team to team, they always find a sense of comfort and family in the team that they're on, regardless if he's a new guy or not. It's just you come into the locker room, hey, we're all here for the same reason, and that's to win, you know, football games and ultimately win a Super Bowl.
615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ask D-Mace your questions for Derek Mason. Let's go to the phone line. Mike has a question for D-Mace. Mike, welcome in.
Hey, guys. So two-part question, and I've been thinking about how to phrase it the entire time, so maybe help me out. So Josh Gordon is brought in with the expectation, I guess, to help with stretching the field. Derek, how quickly can we expect for a guy, if Josh Gordon's going to play, how quickly do we expect him to, like, know the playbook, or do we basically have him just to go run fly routes in the deep, you know, the deep routes that there are options on the table? The second part of the question, because I don't know if Josh Gordon is truly going to be the answer to that deep route burner answer, what are the Titans offense going to have to do to try to get defenses to kind of back off the ball a little bit and not stack the box? Because I just see a lot of man press and, you know, very short zones, because there's just nobody on this team that's got a ton of speed that's going to scare you. So what other ways can the Titans get the pressure off of Henry? Because I'm just trying to see that with the offense that got laid out right now.
Well, thank you, Mike, for the call. Let me address your first question in regards to deep threats and when should people expect him to play. That depends on Josh Gordon, how fast he picks up the playbook. If he picks up the playbook relatively fast, then, you know, you will see him on an active roster, possibly even this weekend. Well, not this weekend, but next weekend versus the Giants. Now, if he's, you know, still struggling to pick up the playbook because, you know, he's in shape because he's been in the camp. So it's not like they're just getting this guy, he hadn't been in the camp, and they're bringing him in. Then they have to worry about, well, is he in condition enough to play? Let's get him in condition first, and then we can play him. But this guy is already in condition. So if he learns the playbook, the parts of the playbook that they are giving him, the packages, if he learns that very quickly, then there's a possibility you can see him versus the New York Giants. Now, he's a guy that can run any route. I've seen him play. You know, at one time, I said this before, one time he was on his way to being the best receiver in the National Football League, and I honestly mean that. So he's not just a deep threat guy. He can run just about any route you throw at him. But the Titans need him to be out there to help stretch the field because, you know, now that Racy McMath is on IR, he's probably the one guy that can – threaten, you know, the safety down the field, or could put pressure on those safeties down the field, and they got to cover him on the outside. So that's what is going to be in regards to deep threat and how he will play. Now, in regards to the box situation, how do the Titans get, you know, defenses outside the box? You know, listen, they were not able to do it when Derrick Henry was rushing for 2,000 yards. And as long as Derrick Henry's in the backfield, I don't see teams getting out of the box, regardless of what you do. Yeah, regardless of what. Now, they're going to mix their defenses up and try to disguise them as good as possible, but they're going to make sure they have a guy, unless it's on obvious passing downs, they're going to have a guy in that box making sure that Derrick Henry doesn't get loose. So, you know, you didn't see people getting outside the box ever when Derrick Henry's been in the backfield, whether it's a 2,000-yard season, 1,500-yard season, or whatever. People have to account for Derrick Henry when he's in the backfield. So I don't think, regardless of what the Titans do, people are going to say, oh, you know what, we're just going to, you know, back off and, you know, allow Derrick Henry to, you know, run wild. Teams are not going to do that.
NFL Next Gen Stats, 2021, 36.5% of the time, Derrick Henry faced a stacked box, number one in the league.
Yeah, it's
that's not going to change. That
one. No, it's not going to change.
No, not at all. and it shouldn't. 615-737-1025. Ask D-Mace. We'll take another round of your phone calls and your texts. Coming up next, Chase Willie and D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. Continuing, Ask D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, and Derek Mason. 615-737-1025. That is our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You can ask anything. We've had a lot of football questions. You can ask about life as well. Maybe I'll hit you up with some love advice. Or ask you about some love advice. I'm not going to give you love advice. I'm the one that needs it.
Hey, I probably need some too, but no, go ahead.
You know. It ain't easy, man. It ain't easy.
This is going to be one of my favorite segments. It's already becoming that. We've kind of rolled it out for a test drive, and now we have an open.
Yes.
Right now it's official. You heard the open. This means it's a thing.
Every Friday at 12:30. So mark your calendars, because every Friday at 12:30, you can ask D-Mace, and then at 1 o'clock, Eddie George will join the show.
Oh, this is huge.
So this is big for Titan Weekend. Coming up, but Eddie's going to join us at 1 o'clock. All right, so more on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. An unnamed texter, and please put your name if you text in. I want to know if D-Mace would join a local flag football team. Hey, you don't get hit in that. You could do that.
Hey, you still got to run around. Somebody might try to hit you just because, or you might fall catching a pass. I played in a flag football league, I think, a year or two after my retirement. A friend of mine, I played on his league. Yeah. And I felt out of place, because it was like, I'm sort of a professional and they I don't really want to go out here.
I can't believe they got you to play.
And just, you know, so I didn't, it was like I went in, I wasn't in all the time. I just kind of took myself in and out. I was mostly out and in, because I thought it was a disadvantage.
Yeah,
so.
Here's the thing. I as the program director here at 1025, 1063 The Game, I think it'd be a great idea for us to make a flag football team. But there's one thing that would get on my nerves.
What?
Because if I'm going to draw it up, let's say I'm the GM and I draw it up, Derek obviously is the go-to guy. I'd probably have Willie as either a receiver or a quarterback.
He had to be the quarterback.
Robbie could be, you know, multiple positions. Mm-hmm. I think Joe can provide some athleticism. But what's going to get old is Coach Stillman standing on the sideline. Get the ball to Derek. Get the ball to Derek. Why are you throwing to Joe? Get the ball to Derek. I mean, you'd hear that every
seconds. Have to have Caroline. She would be the running back. But swinging out the backfield. Yeah, you know, toss
Michelle,
it to her.
You know, I think Nick could provide some help as well. Nick's a hockey player. But
Nick, you know Nick would be? The get back coach.
What'd you do?
Yeah, baby.
There you go.
Yeah. There we go. But no, I mean, my, you know, I hung up my cleats.
I have learned,
or turf shoes,
flag
whatever
football.
You want to call
it can get pretty hardcore. I was once asked. This is one of my favorite stories, and it got me to a whole new level of appreciation for officials. I was asked to volunteer to referee for a flag football tournament. And I was like, hey, all right, sounds like fun. I'll just go out there and, you know, we'll have a little fun, you know, throw a flag. They even gave me a flag. These guys were there. This was a big flag football tournament. And these guys were running plays. These guys were from all kinds of different cities, and they came in to win. They were screaming at each other during the game. They were screaming at me. I was being asked to throw. I didn't know the rules. I was just given a quick, you know, cursory rundown of here are the rules to look for. People were telling me that the other team was lining up in an illegal formation. I was like, you think I'm going to throw a flag for an illegal formation? They were getting all over me. I had a new appreciation. But, flag football is like
it's hardcore,
for real.
Man. It's hardcore.
For real.
This would be Nick.
I need you lower! Hit it! Hey, pull your pants up!
You've never heard me in my own hockey game, so you should come out for that and
Scott,
see how I am.
Scott Cochran, man. The best.
Oh, my goodness. My days of playing flag football are just about over.
Now you did,
I'm not going to say never. I will never play, but let's just say it's close to it.
You did at training camp say you could go out there for 10 pass patterns and have some success against the Titans guys.
Yeah, I could.
Okay.
But then they would have to pay me afterwards.
You're a Bentley right now. I'm just going to put spinners on that thing.
I love that guy so much. Mark on our text line says, being a father of a freshman football player, what would you say is the most important thing to do to learn the game / position and to continue to grow in the sport?
Get with some of those veteran guys, those upperclassmen, and pick their brain. It's so hard in college, though, because you got to juggle both going to class and your obligations, you know, as an athlete as well. But anytime you can, you know, anytime you have free time, whenever there's free time outside of your classwork or studying, then your nose should be in that playbook. If this is indeed what you really want to do. Because sometimes, you know, guys or girls, they, you know, get to college and, you know, they played a sport, and whether they're a scholarship athlete or not, they played a sport. But then they get there, and it's like, I really don't feel like playing it anymore. I enjoy being on the team, but I don't. It's not in me like that, like it used to be. And that happened. So, but if this is what you truly want to do, then, you know, if you have gotten your study in, getting your work in the classroom, then that other time needs to be spent with your nose in a playbook, trying to get better as an athlete, and picking the brains of those upperclassmen too that are in your particular room.
Another football question, BP in Springfield. Being a big 49ers fan, I want to get Derek's thoughts on the Jimmy G and Lance issue in San Francisco. Do you think the 49ers restructured Jimmy to trade him, or just because they want him to back up? Personally, I think the restructure would just make him more tradable as they kept three quarterbacks.
That may be a good one. That could be the.
I think the market could be that, there as the season goes. Yeah. You know, if a quarterback gets hurt, whatever.
But it's going to take a quarterback getting hurt, because if you look at, you know, look around the NFL now, there's not. If you look at each team, there may be one starting job truly available, one or two. And I'm trying to think. I can always throw out Seattle because of their situation. But besides Seattle, who else is out there that's in dire need of a quarter, like a starting quarterback at this point? I'm sure there's probably other teams, but offhand, I don't know. But listen, I don't think anyone was going to trade for Jimmy G. He still was rehabbing. At one point in time, he was rehabbing that shoulder, so no one was going to touch him then. And then I think San Fran just wanted too much with that salary. They wanted too much, and I understand why. So teams sort of backed off, and You know, it's good to have him as an insurance policy because anything can happen in this game. Your number one quarterback goes down, and all of a sudden, you know, you go from being a Super Bowl contender to, you know, trying to make it to the playoffs. Well, if something happens to Trey Lance, they can always fall back on Jimmy G and still be in the same sort of place.
You know what Nick Saban would say about that?
What?
You know, whatever happens, we just get another player.
I found my old drop.
Only so Nick. Rick, only Nick can say that.
Did you have cereal this morning?
I found all my old drops. I'm so happy. I miss that so much.
So they're in a good situation with their quarterback. You know, Jimmy G, Trey Lance.
I'm wondering what happens if Lance struggles and Jimmy G's sitting there and the fans start going, wait a minute, we won a lot of games with Jimmy G. And this Lance thing's not going very well. I do wonder what kind of tension that could create.
It all depends on if they're still winning or not.
That's what I'm saying. If they're struggling, if he's struggling,
but they're winning because of their defense, then they're going
to
keep him.
See, I even think even if he's struggling, you can't go back to Jimmy G.
Yeah, it's almost tough
to do that. You've kind of made your bed here.
I know, but that's what's interesting. What if it doesn't work?
And John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are connected to him. So whatever happens.
They say that now, but he's there. And that won't stop the fans. If they're 2-3 and it's been a struggle a little bit, and you'll hear it. Jimmy G is 31-14 or whatever he is. I mean, the record in games he started and the record without him is a stark contrast. And Lance, it sounds great right now, and maybe Lance ends up being awesome. That could happen, but we'll see.
This is officially the end of Ask D-Mace for this week, but we will do it again next Friday at 12:30.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
So there you go. So in the questions, Eddie George, TSU head coach, former Titan. Coming up next, Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.